Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to another remote episode of Hip Hop Saved My Life. I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but Rupert is not with us today. We are joined by the sometime Hip Hop Saved My Life contributor. I don't know if contributor is the right word. Ben Green. Hello, Ben. How are you?
Good. How are you? Nice to be back. Thanks for inviting me and being so keen to get me on again.
Yeah, I mean, look, it has been a while since you've been on. I would also say that you're here sort of by request, aren't you? And not by my request. Sort of your request, aren't you? Because there's a couple of reasons why Ben's on the podcast today. One is that Rupert's working on a film, and so he gets very tired, and it's very difficult for him to get the energy up to make the three verbal contributions that he makes in an hour on the podcast. So he's taken the night off. And also, you're a big fan of the guest that we have on today, right?
Yeah, big fan. Yeah, indeed. Am I allowed to say? Are you going to do some reveal? Is that?
No, you can refer to him by name. I mean, he's sitting here watching us have this chat.
It's weird. So. It also feels weird that you're announcing that before having this chat.
Should I have said that at the end?
Well, or just not said it. Just sort of go like, oh, we've got you on because you provide really interesting insight into hip-hop culture. You've got really funny sort of anecdotes that you want to share. Anything along those lines. I think saying you've only brought me on because I've requested it because I'm a massive fan of Munya is an awful way to start this.
I'd say the only person it's awful for is you, really. I mean, it's great for me. It's certainly great for Munya. I think I'm pretty happy with it.
Good. I'm pleased. This has gone started well for me. So thank you.
Good. Well, good to have you here. Without any more pissing about, we are delighted to have... It's difficult to sort of basically. I was about to say like the hottest comedic talent out right now, but then that implies that this is like a moment. Whereas I think he's going to have a very long career. So, but we are joined by the legend that is Munya Chihuahua. How you doing, mate?
All right, lads. I am absolutely ecstatic to be on the pod. It was weird having to watch you talk about me without being able to say anything. It was like watching a really strange iteration of The Sims.
Did it feel good or awful?
Well, I don't know. I mean, when I met Ben, he didn't look starstruck. You know, it looked like it had been a very long day for him and he thought, oh, what's all this now? So to hear that he's a fan is good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it sort of... You didn't seem that fussed that hearing that I was a fan. I guess it's not maybe on your top list of accolades.
No, I think that's all I've been working towards, to be honest. Sure. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is just a victory lap now.
That's great.
Yeah. The whole long game of what Munya's been doing is to get you as a fan, and he's achieved it now. So congratulations.
It sounds like you also wanted to be on the podcast. Great. Two things at once. It's
this is the victory lap at this point. But no, I'm excited to be on the podcast because I love you, obviously. Well, hang on, that sounds a bit too romantic. I love what you do, Romesh, on stage. And so,
well, likewise, mate.
When I saw when I heard that you did this podcast about hip-hop, which I've listened to a few episodes before when Rupert was on. Sorry, Ben, that wasn't a sort of indirect.
It felt really unnecessarily pointed.
Sorry.
It was utterly unnecessary. But considering the only thing you know about me is that I like the stuff that you do, to then decide to sort of single out my rival and competitor as the ones you listen to.
Listen, my point being, it's a fusion of two things I take much enjoyment from. So I'm happy to be there.
It's amazing how quickly you can go off someone, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, listen, man, it's so good to have you on. Does it feel like, because obviously that you are, and look, I think you're obviously, you're at the beginning. I know you've been going for a while, but you're at the beginning of your trajectory, really, I think. I think, you know, and I don't know how it feels from your side of things, but it feels like you've just sort of exploded into everybody's kind of conscience. I mean, I know you've been going for a while and people have known about you for a while, but it feels like it's taken a step up, right?
Definitely. I mean, look, I will say I've tried to find a space as an entertainer for a long time, trying all sorts of different things. You know, I tried to do like a sort of 60-second satirical wrap up on Twitter. I used to do that every week, 6 and 60 seconds. It was like 6 stories in 60 seconds. I tried being a fashion vlogger, which went awful. You know, I was very much trying to brand myself as the Zimbabwean Zoella, which was never going to work. And, you know, I just was trying everything. And I was thinking to myself, something's got to work.
Right.
And so the sketches had started to pick up momentum, you know, for the last year and a half. And I guess all it was is I was doing the same thing, but this time there was people around to watch it. All the people who would have missed that stuff previously because they were on the tube or they were at work were now just sat in front of their phones waiting for any content. And I just happened to be in a place where my brain was sort of being triggered by everything that was happening. And so I was putting out more content than usual. And I guess I was just able to get more exposure. So I would have kept on going anyway, but it just feels good to know that things have been accelerated by the fact that people were around to watch my content this year.
I know what you're saying, and I think you're right in terms of during lockdown and when all this happened, people were craving content. But you've also, to say that's the only reason would be sort of doing yourself a disservice, I think, because like one of the things that you have been very good at is turning round something that's very much of the moment, very, very quickly and doing it very, very well. And I think probably the paramount example of that is when Chip did his Stormzy diss. Mm-hmm. And then the speed at which you turned around that video of your take on that was fucking insane, man.
Mm. Didn't think it was me that would murk you. Here's one for the tweet gang to chirp to. I'm a posh MC, but I make man run out of bars like a 10 p.m. curfew. I'm so unholy, turned up to the clash on the back of a bright white pony. You may be the guy, but I can make a grown man cry like Angelina Jolie. Man's got whips, falafel, hummus, dips, but I know carbs go straight to my hips, so I could never waste time on chips. That's not me, no, that's not. I got tings from Tottenham to Ascot. Come sorry on a bad boy ting, man, will get dropped just like Arsenal's mascot.
And if things from your point of view, was that just like, okay, this is, we've got to get this. Was it like, all hands to the pump, let's get this done as quickly as possible. This could go big if we get this out quickly. I mean, is that what you were thinking?
I think it was more, I mean, you know, the honest answer is it was all hands on a pizza and Xbox controller at the time it all started to go on. Now, I'd already done a sketch that day, and I was in bed eating pizza, you know, in the most unglamorous fashion. You know, I was using my four-pack as a sort of tray. And, you know, I was there eating, playing video games, and I saw Chip and Stormzy had start to go at it. And I thought, you know, is anyone going to be in the mood for this beef? And then I went on Twitter and I thought, oh, well, you know, people really are in the mood for the beef, because I can see it says Chip versus Stormzy, 7,000 tweets, and this is maybe after half an hour. So naturally, I click on the link, and then my name is the first tweet. So I thought, hang on, what's, you know, what is going on here? And it said, you know, Chip has sent for Stormzy, but the only person who really has 24 hours is Munya Chihuahua. I thought, since when? You know, since when am I now having to, you know, why am I being roped into this? The most I've ever contributed to the rap scene is 60 seconds in a posh voice. And now all of a sudden I'm being asked to wade in. I felt like one of those referees in the middle of WrestleMania and The Rock suddenly drops a people's elbow on you just out of nowhere. And it was a case where I tried to ignore it and the tweets kept on coming. And I was just about to go to bed and just about to close the laptop, and I had one Twitter message, which wasn't the surprising thing. I mean, my DMs are extremely dry. But anyway, I opened it and it was from John Boyega, and he said, you know, get down to a Shell petrol station ASAP. And at that point, I thought, look, once the stormtroopers start to raid in, I think, you know, this is now gone beyond, you know, I can't return. It's the point of no return. So I messaged my editor and I said to him, because I needed help to film the video the next morning. So I messaged him. I said, look, I'm going to need you up really early tomorrow. And he said, yeah, no worries, man. I'll set the alarm for 8 a.m. And I was thinking to myself, it's going to be a lot earlier than 8 a.m, mate. And he got the call at about, he got the call at 2:30. And yeah, the rest is history.
It's one thing to do it in that time. It's another thing to actually do it well, because obviously you've had a DM from a stormtrooper. A lot of people are saying that you've got to do this.
Mm.
So then you've got the pressure of, like, you could disappoint, right? So was that, does that play on your mind when you're doing it, or do you have to distance yourself from that and just do what you think is good, just try and please yourself?
Okay, so once upon a time, I was working as a producer at 4Music. And once upon a time, Chip was the guest on that show. And so when he arrived very late, and we were coming out of an ad break. We had about 45 seconds and I was in charge of getting him onto set in time. And I said to him, right, bro, we're going to walk you to the set and I'm going to brief you on what's going to happen. And he said, I need to go to the toilet. I said, bro, we haven't got time. And he went, so you've got time to brief me, but you haven't got time to take me to the toilet. And I said, well, no, it's just, I'm going to brief you on the way there. And so at that point, you know, I established, well, he wasn't very nice to me. And it sort of, I spent the rest of the evening, well, I spent basically the last 2 years thinking what I would say if I ever had to battle rap Chip. So by the time they asked me to write a battle rap, I was like, well, got out this huge Bible of Chip disses. I'd been harbouring all of that anger and, you know, all of those feelings and those bars in, like, you know, for 2.5 years. So it's really like a time. My time has come, you know.
Wow.
Mate, that's so funny, because you do think, does that happen? If somebody's rude to somebody, if like a on-screen talent is rude to somebody, does that person harbour a grudge?
Mm.
And what, I mean, I guess the worst possible thing to happen is that they end up being able to spit bars. I mean, that's the absolute worst that can happen, I guess.
I think the absolute worst...
What a nightmare for Chip.
Well, the absolute worst actually did happen on that very same day Chip was on the show. When I was a producer, I was very keen on coming up with the most stupid ideas possible. And one of those ideas for when we had celebrity guests was a feature called Heard It Through the Grapevine, in which we would have this grapevine made of massive purple balloons. And they would be filled with different slips of things that had been said about the person on the internet. For example, is it true you paid this person this much to collab? Is it true that once this happened, they'd pop the balloons and then pick up the slip, read it out, and then debunk it. Now, when you've got people like, you know, Anne-Marie or, you know, Sam Smith on the show, whatever, they're used to doing stuff like that. So it's easy for them. Now, Chip was on the show and he was about to do this game. The only thing that had happened when I devised this game is I hadn't realized that someone would have to dress up as a giant grapevine covered in purple balloons. And it was me. So having had that encounter with Chip, 5 minutes later, after him giving me daggers, I had to walk on covered in purple balloons and ask him to poke me so that little slips of paper could fall out.
That's great.
Oh, my God, mate. The magic of television.
Yeah, I just remember standing in front of him dressed in these purple balloons and a green morph suit, holding a skewer and just sort of telepathically saying, I'm sorry, bro.
That's amazing. And so now you've got to a situation where you have got, you're signed to a record label now as Unknown P.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell did, I mean, I don't mean how the hell, that sounded like I was absolutely in disbelief. What I mean is, how did that come about, man?
So what I will say is that in terms of putting out content, I put out two videos a week for over 2 years now. So one thing I do back myself on is consistency, because, you know, to do that is a big commitment. It takes a lot of brain power to write the videos, act in them, edit them, produce them, etc. So obviously some people were noticing this, whether you like the character or dislike the character, you were noticing, okay, he seems to be popping up quite a lot. Now, when I dropped two of my Unknown P songs during summer, obviously there was a bigger audience to watch them, and so people would like them. And I decided, oh, maybe I should do an EP, just a fun one. I've done a YouTube series at the beginning of lockdown called Merkin From Home, where people like, you know, Novelist and Big Zoo, Lady Leisha, they've all got on the show. So I'm thinking to myself, maybe I know enough people and enough producers to make an EP. I'd received a message from this guy at Atlantic, very high up. And he said to me, I just wanted to say well done on everything you're doing, just regardless of I just think your talent is going to take you really far. Just wanted to reach out and say thanks. There was no proposition of a music offer. Anyway, having read the signature at the bottom of his email, it jogged my memory when I was thinking about doing this EP, and I wrote to him and I said, oh, just out of interest, if I was going to do an EP, what do I have to do? I don't understand anything about music. You know, I don't know how I make money from it. Da, da, da. And he just said, I want to make the EP with you. I want to make this happen. And so, yeah, one thing led to another. For me, it was just getting the assurance that, look, I understand that I'm not an artist. All I want to do is create something that is a moment, doesn't sound crap, and kind of does justice to the arc that I've been taking this character on. And then I'm happy. Whatever your goals are, cool. Those are your goals, but these are my goals. And he said, cool, that's fine. And then, you know, here we are.
So
what stage is it at now? Like, are you recording?
So I've actually recorded 5 songs already. I signed a deal for 2 singles to begin with, because I wanted to see, look, let's be realistic about this. If people like it, great. If they don't like it, no problem. But you'll never catch me trying to rinse a character. You know, I understand the shelf life of things. So let's go with 2 singles. First one's out. Second one maybe will drop next year. And if that goes well, people have an appetite for an EP, we'll do an EP. But I've got the music banked.
Okay. And you've just brought out this single, Piers Morgan. Mm. Which Piers Morgan has taken notice of.
Mm. I'm like Piers, because I got more dough than female peers. And the whole game got my name in their mouth, like those Turkish veneers. And I'm like Hackman, CNMC on the block, I'm Robin in Batman. I'm a snatcher, my new ting bad, Margaret Thatcher. And I'm stacking, caviar man snacking. I send shots via Royal Mail and I never pay for the tracking. I bleed blue, so it's the Tory party I'm backing. And the first name ain't Eden, but I'm still a hazard when attacking.
Were you expecting that? Was that something? I mean, it's always on the cards with Piers Morgan that if something involves his name, he's gonna talk about it. But it's pretty mad, the take up on it, isn't it?
It's been brilliant, man. I mean, realistically, for me, I think I already count that as a W. That's already a win for me, because ultimately, I have to think to myself, I've started this character in my mum's living room in Norfolk, in a little cottage called. It was called Laundry Cottage in a little village called Framingham Piggott. I've started it in there. 30 seconds of improv it was. And now it's being played on GMB. You know, Good Morning Britain. Already I have to just take a step back and say, yeah, that's the most I could have wanted from it. In terms of the track getting traction and stuff like that, it's an interesting one because it's all working to plan. The last thing that has to happen is for me to go on GMB and then I can finally reveal this master plan of what I've done the character for, but I can't say it until then. But there's something incredible about hearing, about visualising all the Dorothys across Britain nodding their heads along to me singing about big sticks with the corn in.
It's an interesting one, though, isn't it? It's an interesting one because one of the things is, you know, obviously we've seen... You see rap parodies and we've seen a lot of that in the past. One of the problems that I think music fans have always had with that is that it feels like somebody from the outside kind of taking the piss, you know, and it's kind of done without an affection for it. Whereas when Unknown Peter's doing it, when you're doing it, it feels like this is somebody that actually likes the music, but it's sort of taking the elements and putting a different spin on it. Is that something you were conscious of, or did that just happen organically? You know, how did that come about?
I always try and put a lot of thought into my characters, and every character has a thematic backdrop. There's some sort of social issue being dealt with by the character. But in regards to what you say about my connection with music, you know, I was on Represent Radio for 4 years, which is a community radio station in Brixton. I was interviewing a guest. I would have a different artist on twice a week. Sometimes even up until 4 guests per show. So I was meeting all kinds of artists, spending my weeks researching them, going through their old tweets and Instagram photos just to learn stuff about them, to appreciate them, to give them the best interview. I always wanted to be the guy on the show who would give artists the best interview they'd ever have. So I do have a vested interest in the scene, in the culture. When I devised the character, I was really toying with issues of class and racism and, you know, prejudice, because ultimately, in a nutshell, at the time that the character was conceived, people were demonizing drill. They were saying, look, drill music is what black boys listen to, and then they walk out the front door and they kill someone. That is, you can boil down the narrative of the British media to that. Meanwhile, I'm seeing videos of, you know, kids in private schools absolutely loving Homerton B or whatever, you know, whatever drill was charting at the time. And I'm thinking, so what about these kids then? Why are they getting the pass? And I thought, cool, if your theory is that anyone who listens to drill does X, Y, and Z, let me embody one of these posh kids. And let's see if your theory still stands when we are kind of, you know, when a posh person is performing drill. Now, the character goes beyond, you know, rapping in a posh voice. Like there's hidden meanings and stuff, which I'm still waiting to talk about if we ever get onto GMB. But the point is, when you listen to Unknown P, if you're laughing at the bars, great. But if you're understanding that there's some sort of deeper commentary on class, then that's also good. Because if you've ever said, oh, I like Unknown P because I can relate to the bars, or I like the way he says them, maybe you're part of the problem. Because the fact is, a lot of the time, I'm literally saying what real drill rappers say, but it's disguised in a posh voice.
Yeah. And how do you, because you raise an interesting point there, because this is something that is not just unique to drill. You can take it back to when, you know, hip hop like really blew up in the 90s and stuff. Is this argument about the fact that the music is representing what is happening, but it's being consumed by people who are completely detached from that. And so there's a kind of a voyeuristic element where you're kind of enjoying these kind of violent lyrics by a community that you have absolutely no connection with. I mean, is that something that's in the forefront of your mind? I mean, I guess it is from where Unknown P is coming from. But
I'm thinking a lot about the time when, I remember this very clearly, it was the year that Britain decided that they liked grime. And the Brit Awards, there was this one guy who worked on our radio station called Reese, who did this amazing sketch during the Brits that year, where he pretends to be Dermot O'Leary, and he was like, so tonight on the show, we've got a bit of grime sandwich between a bit of grime, and then we're also going to have a bit of grime after the break, a bit of grime, and a bit more grime. And it was like, we'd gone from a place where people had said, oh, grime's very violent, you know, shouldn't be listening to that, to then realising it was kind of becoming really popular. And then everyone turned around and went, oh my God, I've always loved grime. Like, grime is literally, I can't go without it. And so it was this process of, again, demonizing something, watching it become popular, and then feeling embarrassed for not being on that bandwagon and going, yeah, I love it too. And that's what I saw with drill. And so in a lot of ways, Unknown P is also about that. People hated drill, started to chart. It was in all the clubs. And then you were uncool for not enjoying the music. And so people kind of squashed down their prejudices and went, oh yeah, I've always loved drill. And, you know, I was seeing a lot of that, and I just wanted a way of expressing it, you know?
Well, it's great stuff, man. And listen, if I can do anything, I've got no connection with the GMB. So, but if I did, I'd get you on there, mate. I mean, I assume is that in the pipeline? Is that looking likely?
I think the posh drill rap is taking second place to the vaccination of a global pandemic. So I understand. But yes, hopefully before Christmas it will happen.
So is your eventual career goal to be so big that you would be number one over the pandemic? Is that kind of your eventual kind of target?
I think the day that everyone wakes up and doesn't think about COVID, but instead thinks, oh yeah, I wonder who Unknown P's clarting this morning. That's when I know I've made it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rack your brains, give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
So, obviously you're a hip-hop fan. Do you remember the first kind of records, or was there an album in particular that sort of got you into it?
Yeah, so I remember Gangsta, DJ Premier, Guru. You know, the song was Know My Steez.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing the instrumental for that and just loving how it was repetitive, but in a way that kind of it sort of made me almost start to freestyle, because, you know, I wasn't trying to predict what the next direction of the music was. I knew that the beat was constant. And then hearing him rap over it, and he's always, for me, Gangstar have always been this combination of great beats, great punchlines, and also sometimes there's some real storytelling in there. I don't even know how I ended up with the CD, to be honest, because I always loved DJ Premier. I knew that much. I would always search for his beats on YouTube. But yeah, Moment of Truth was my first hip-hop album, and I just remember completely rinsing it. I loved JFK to LAX. Again, I think so the best hip-hop for me is where you can listen to it one day and only be focusing on the beat, and you listen to it the next day and you're only focusing on the lyrics. So when you're listening to them together, it's just a pure delight. You know what I mean?
Yo, they got me handcuffed. I'm down in Central Booking. Things are fucked up the way my future's looking. But I'm too fly, I'ma change this scenario. Make some power moves and tighten up my bankroll. Chumps are leery though, they see me as a threat. I'm like the Black Dutch Schultz when you get me upset. 5-0 makes me wanna flip, Larry Davis style. Got a nigga depressed while he's awaiting trial. It's okay though, cause from gray skies come blue. Through darkness comes light, and I be known as the guru. And this I certify, we all should be alerted by the traps.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. And I think Gangstar are a very good example of that, because obviously Premier's production is absolutely incredible. And so you could, I mean, to be honest with you, with Gangstar, that's always what grabs you first, is Primo's production. And then Guru's got that voice, which is just amazing. And then, as you said, you start picking up on what's actually being spoken about until you've heard it like 5 or 6 times, man. It's and other times you'd suddenly get a punchline. I remember, like, sometimes you get a punchline like a year after you started listening to that record. It's mad.
I think you're particularly slow though, Ramesh. I think that's
yeah, that is a fair point. I was going to say that either means there's a real depth to the lyricism, or I just really am as fucking thick as we suspected. But I remember going to see Gangstar, and obviously, like, Militia was such an incredible tune. And I remember, like, Freddie Fox coming out, he started rapping, he pulled out a Super Soaker. I mean, actually, the imagery of it is pretty rank now when you think about it. I mean, they all had Super Soakers, they're firing into the crowd. I mean, it feels pretty...
Not your best day to wear the white T-shirt, was it?
No. but people around me seem
There's
to...
an image.
People around me seem to love it, do you know what I mean? They're sort of screaming, off, 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 do you know what I mean? It took the Gangstar gig into a really weird vibe, to be honest with you. And also, I mean, the other thing is we were lucky enough to have Premier on the podcast. And I would I would encourage people not to listen to it, because while Premier was excellent, my sort of fanboyish, disgusting kind of behaviour, my sort of sycophantic kind of mutterings were really embarrassing. We had to put a warning out at the beginning of the podcast, so it's a fucking low point for me, I'll be honest with you, mate. And so you started off listening to Gangstar, and then what other stuff did you sort of move on to from there? Was it that kind of East Coast sound that you listened to, or we listened to everything?
I would say, actually, when I think about it, although that might have been my first conscious purchase, my mum actually used to play a lot of music on the way to school. We went through a heavy metal phase, which was embarrassing. Where, you know,
what sort of heavy metal were you into?
I sort of, like, you know, I'd be getting ready for year two, a day of year two lessons, listening to Slipknot, you know, sort of charging to class, paper cutting everyone. But when we weren't doing that, I was listening. We were always listening to Tribe Called Quest. I remember, like, just being a kid and being like, I don't eat green eggs and ham because they're high in cholesterol.
I don't eat no ham and eggs.
A tasket. What's a mama's basket?
Some veggie links
and some fish that stinks.
Why, just the other day I went to grandma's house.
Smelled like you conjured up a mouse.
Eggs was frying,
ham was smelling.
In 10 minutes, she started yelling, "Come and get it!"
And the gators look good. I said I shouldn't eat it. She said I think you should,
but I can't.
And then, you know, just it was stuff that we could repeat. Yeah. So, you know, Tribe Called Quest. I then sort of transitioned from them into the Far Side. I then went through a phase of really loving Talib Kweli, who, even now, you know, we talk about meanings looping back around. I was having a day just the other day because I'm moving to a new flat, which is why there's a mattress on the wall. This is not my anger room, you know. And whilst we were moving in, I just remember being bombarded with work, and I had deadlines for brands I had to hit. I had sketches I had to do. I had this bloody, TV cabinet I had to assemble with like a kitchen knife because we didn't have any screwdrivers. And in that moment, whilst I was sort of on all fours, riddled with splinters, I remember this song by Talib Kweli called Everything Man, where he's talking about everyone wanting everything from him from all different directions. And yeah, sometimes it takes, you know, assembling an IKEA piece of furniture to really sort of bring out the lyricism in a Talib Kweli track.
Yeah.
Comes of a dream deferred that never makes it to the world to be seen or heard. Do it breathe? Do it die? A heartbeat? Is it alive? Do it leave? Only to become a star in the sky? I believe. Scratch that. I know this ain't my full potential. Only using 10% of my mental on instrumentals. But incidentally, my energy heavenly. Can he be so ill? There ain't no pill or no remedy. The maker of memories possess the recipe.
I mean, he's someone that, like, I think I've listened to like The Blast. I know I took the piss out of you, Rob, but like, I think about The Blast, I've probably listened to that track like over 1,000 times. I was thinking, I actually don't really have a clue what that track's about. Like, it's so dense, isn't it? And like, yeah, he's amazing. But like, I feel like he's one of those people you have to actually study. And like, you can't, yeah, if you have it on in the background, you get very little from it. You really got to like properly go in deep with him.
100%, man. It's one of those things where sometimes, it depends what mood you're in, because I don't know how accurate this is or whether there's any studies to actually provide clarity of this, but I have mates who always seem to exclusively be able to pick out lyrics from a song. Me, I barely ever remember lyrics
Same.
From a song.
Yeah.
I just remember how it makes me feel. I just remember what mood it puts me in. And so people think I'm less of a music fan, but I am. Like, there's some songs I listen to 1,000 times and I still don't know the lyrics to
them. We were doing, I don't know if you remember this, Ben, but Ben and I were filming in America. We did a show in the States. And one of the things that we were filming, we went to a Lupe Fiasco gig.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was like me trying to, the whole setup for it was I was trying to basically make friends with Lupe Fiasco. That was the whole setup for the thing, right? And so there was a bit where I'm sort of stood by the side of stage and he said to me, I'm going to bring you on in a bit, right? And I love Lupe Fiasco, right? Love him. And then there was a bit where he was like, he walked up to the front of the stage and he was handing the mic to members of the audience in the front. And they were spitting like word for word, whole verses from his tune. And instead of enjoying that, I just shit my pants that was going to happen to me because I knew that I wouldn't be able to do any of it. And you sort of think that it'll make me look like such a non-fan, but I totally relate to that. I am such a fan of it, but it is...
Unless it was Go Gadget like Flow, that's probably the only one you could probably have done.
Yeah.
Or Chris Martin's bit in Superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? You're joking. That's the bit he got me to sing. I mean, you're taking a piss.
It's one of the worst things I've ever heard was Rom singing that to a stadium full of people. And then shuffling to the back of the stage.
Oh, God. Oh, that's hilarious.
It was.
It was so bad.
It was bad.
It was bad. I totally relate to what you're saying. It's like you know what the song's about. You know what the sentiment of the song is. But you just don't remember. And also, the other thing is that you consume so much music. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's part of it as well. But I think, Ben, you made a good point about with like people like Talib and actually like, you know, Gangstar, Tribe, like the groups we've been talking about, you do have to listen to them. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can obviously, you can have it in the background, but if you want to get what you really want to get out of that song, you've got to make that the main thing that you're doing. Do you know what I mean? It's not a background. Mm-hmm. It can be a background.
Yeah, just what is The Blast about? I can't. It's like, that's probably the most popular. I honestly, like, I can remember like little like lines. I know he gets his name mispronounced. That's the bit that really. But apart from that, I couldn't tell you what it's actually about. But I love it.
I've got to be honest. I was just very scared that you were going to start to do some of his lines. I just thought it would be too. My arsehole would completely close up from the awkwardness.
But Lupe Fiasco is kind of different because he started and it was much more accessible. He just then became unbelievable. Like, yeah, he just sort of went fully conscious into he kind of became much less penetrable.
Yeah.
I find it hard to listen to very conscious rap for long spans.
Yeah.
Because it's just this bombardment on the brain.
Yeah.
You know, that's why sometimes I do lapse back into, I'm not really sure if you categorize it as hip hop, but like some of the modern stuff, which is just quite monotonous and droning in some ways. Sometimes I fall back on that. And I'm absolutely gutted because I fell asleep to Gunna for one night and I'd had the track on repeat and it completely skewed my Spotify Wrapped and makes basically it's given me the music taste of a 14-year-old hype beast.
Do you know what we did? We did an ad for this podcast for Spotify Wrapped, and my kid, they said to me, "Have a look at your past Spotify Wrapped and see if you can talk about it during your ad for the thing." Last year, my number one listened to song for 2019 on Spotify was "I'm Not Evil" by Tiffany Haddish from the Lego Movie 2 soundtrack, because my kids are just on it all the time. And I was just like, I can't read this out. I host a fucking hip hop podcast. Like, this is mental.
I have to say, like, actually, I've got a 2-year-old daughter, and like, it ruined Spotify. She's ruined Spotify for me because now I can't. All that comes up when I look at it is Coco Melon and like kids stuff. So actually, genuinely stops me listening to music now because like, it's just full of shit. Yeah, don't have
on the other hand though, what you can do is you can freely listen to like Willy Bum Bum whenever you want.
Yeah,
you know, you know, you can just blame it on the kids.
Undercover.
So there is an upside.
Yeah.
Hey man, what's your favorite hip hop album?
In terms of like your favorites, is there an album that sort of stands out to you as kind of your favorite of all time? I know it's a tough question. We ask it to everybody.
No, I have a friend called Trent who's an absolute music head. You know, it's really hard having a conversation if you ever go around his house because he's always got music on so loud, but he loves it. He lives and breathes it. And he sometimes gets on the verge of just straight up punching me in the face because I do this thing where I listen to music. And when the song starts, I skip straight to the middle to listen to a few seconds in the middle. And I decide in that moment whether I like it or not. And he hates it so much. And I know it's the most disrespectful thing you can do. But like I said, sometimes you get into the middle and you hear that 3 seconds and you go, oh my God, I got to get to the beginning of this because I can tell already. And so I'm a skipper, basically. I skip through songs. I skip through albums to see if I like them. And if I have to skip through a certain amount of songs on an album, I go, yeah, this one isn't for me. The only non-skip album, I think, realistically from within the hip-hop realm, is Kendrick Lamar, Damn, where I can listen to it start to finish and I just think, perfect. Apart from Humble, but that's nothing to do with how the song is made. It's just that sometimes I don't like songs that everyone likes because it's sort of, I just like that feeling of finding hidden gems. But of course, you've got to make singles. Mm. So with that aside, Kendrick Lamar is the album that I'll put on a plane when I'm falling to sleep because I'm so used to it by this point, it's therapy.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, and sworn like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got.
I mean, it's a combination of, because you sort of talked about conscious rap. I mean, Kendrick has got a message in his lyrics, but it doesn't come at the expense of his stuff really like banging, right? I mean, it's like you don't feel like you're being hit over the head with a message because there's musicality to it. The guy's like next level in terms of his lyricism. Mm-hmm. The way he puts songs together is so incredible. So it doesn't quite feel the same as other stuff like that, does it?
No. And the thing you've got to remember about Kendrick is he is so clever in using his voice as an instrument. You know, the way he always does this thing where he goes into this high-pitched voice, you know, or he talks really fast, almost like on the verge of kind of being chipmunk-esque. You know, all of those things, the manipulation of the voice and the way the voice sounds is part of the musicality of it. And so it means even if he is talking about something quite conscious, you are listening to it being delivered in a way that kind of, in such an unconventional way. So I feel like, as in terms of just somebody who covers all the basis of punchlines, lyricism, structure, it's a surprise, always having an element of surprise with how he delivers things. And then just the instrumental selection and the samples. There's so much going on that you get something new from it each time, for me anyway.
I mean, have you considered sort of, I mean, you're moving tomorrow, right? I mean, maybe tonight just fall asleep to that album. Maybe you can sort of de-skew your playlist or something. I mean,
at this point, I've just accepted my fate of I'm apparently a certified Gunner fan now, so I don't want to let down the team. But no, I think tomorrow, I think the next time I'm on a flight, I will. That's the go-to. Damn, for sure.
Oh man, hip hop grapes. In terms of anything you don't like about hip hop, is there anything that bumps you about it? Anything you're not as keen on?
Well, I think it's got to be, and this just makes me sound sort of archaic, but with the new school of hip hop, new money hip hop, where you go from some of the lyricism and punchlines of like Gangsta to, someone like Future, who I'm sure is a lovely man. But, it's literally, I put my thumb in your ass. It's just like, hey, whoa, hold on. What's the message here?
Well, it feels pretty clear, though.
Yeah, I don't know why you're confused, man.
But do you know what it feels like to me? I can't tell if it just feels lazy. Do you know what I mean? It's like you've got the world at your fingertips. When you're an artist of that caliber, the selection of beats that you must be getting through and the concepts and the writers you could be working with, I don't know, sometimes it just feels like a cop-out to me. But then again, at the same time, sometimes you're in the mood for that. Not the thumb in the bum, but, just for the music of that nature.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I get it. It's light and shade, but I don't know. When the people you first start listening to are Gangsta, A Tribe Called Quest, Royce da 5'9", Tyler Quelle, you feel a bit cheated when you then hear that kind of music making it to the top.
Do you think that partly comes from who you are as an artist? Because I read an interview with you where you were talking about what your sort of your long-term ambitions were. And one of the things you said is you wanted to be indelible rather than being famous. You wanted what you did to be indelible.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody like Kendrick strikes me as having that same kind of mentality. He's driven first and foremost by the art. And somebody like Future, I might be wrong, Future might think he's making masterpieces, and that's that, if that's the case, then I apologize to Future, but it could just be he's just thinking, well, this works, so I'm just going to keep doing this. Do you know what I mean? Because this is providing me with this lifestyle and whatever, it could just be that he's coming at it from a different starting point than you, maybe.
True.
And you don't relate to that kind of...
True.
I mean,
true.
Do you think that's...
Well, yeah, I remember seeing an interview with Drake where he said, I think it was a video interview, and he said something like, I make music for girls, I'm good at it, it works, and that's why I do it. And it was like, in that moment, I felt... like, okay, fair enough. You know your formula, you're good at it, power to you. I'm not sure why I don't feel the same as Future, with Future, but I think it could be a case of, I've been in situations where I can see something works. When I first did my Unknown P character, people were hounding me for it. And I thought, it's just too easy for me to just do that week on end. And also, it's just, it doesn't require any part of my brain to keep thinking of posh things to say. I want to challenge myself. That's not to say that I'm the cream of the crop of aristocracy, but what I'm saying is it was on a plate for me. And I thought I'd be lying to myself if I knew that if I kept doing this, it would be of quality. So my interest lies more in sort of when if you get the inkling you can do better, you should. If Future feels like, nah, this is me, this is like peak me, this is peak music I'm going to make, then fair enough to the guy. But if there's any part of his brain that goes, I just keep churning them out because it works, I just think to myself, I wouldn't be able to live with that.
Yeah. I mean, I read the, it's two people that sort of spring to mind when you sort of talk about that. And one is, and I don't know how familiar you are with them or if at all, but like I read the Beastie Boys book and they talk about when they're making their albums, and every single time they made a new album, they would basically destroy or abandon all the rules they'd set for themselves in the previous album. Do you know what I mean? To just try and reinvent themselves or do something completely different. And the other person I think about who's like that is Kanye. You know, love him or hate him, every single record, you couldn't argue that guy has found what he does and is continuing to do it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. It's a way that different people view it. So what's really interesting to me about that is, is there a part of you that thinks, oh, fucking hell, like that's so easy, and it actually pushes you away from doing that? Like, if you found Unknown P difficult, more difficult to do than you do, that might make you do it more than you're actually inclined to currently. So you want to be challenged rather than be smashing it numbers wise. Is that how you feel?
The thing is, I'm trying to understand as best as possible the nature of popular content or the nature of like media consumption. So sometimes you can do something that gets people to a fever pitch where they're like, more, more, more. And it feels like the second you give it to them, they go, oh, I'm bored of it now. And it's almost like when your impulse is telling you to give them more, you have to say, nope, sorry, that's it for now. I mean, it's the supply and demand tactics that you'll be seeing used by brands like Supreme and all this other thing. You know, it's like, once it's gone, it's gone. Same with Palace. Once the clothing's gone, this line's gone, it's gone. And that's why people still love the brand and people kind of continue to have an appetite for it. So what I'm very much trying to do is just keep on. It's like I'm putting my foot on the gas and then taking it off the gas, not to an extent of being lazy, but basically finding the right times to really accelerate to my top speed with a certain idea. I'm trying to create longevity, like you said, Ramesh, because ultimately social media it feels like fast food. I don't think we're used to seeing things last on social media for a long time. And I'm trying to, in some ways, change that by just being very thoughtful about my content and being very thoughtful about the time of that content so that people can enjoy the videos now and next year and the next year after, you know. Although people have said things like, oh, you know, you've had a really good 2020 or, you know, you've really helped to save 2020 for some people, I don't want you to be defined by this year. You know, I want my content to outlive the span of 2020.
I'm so glad you said that because I've got a travel show coming out next week and somebody was kind enough to tweet me and say, saw that you're on TV next Sunday, as if 2020 couldn't get any worse. So we both have our own connections with people, you know, this year during the pandemic. You know, we mean different things to different people, you know. Have you been to many to much live hip hop? Have you been to many gigs and stuff?
Let me think. So my first ever gig was actually Tiny Temper, and it was a festival called Underage Festival, which, you know, leads you to question the motives of the person organising it. But anyway,
it's a weird festival to gravitate towards. Isn't
it? It is. you know, I was probably just—I think I was like in year nine. So you went there. Tiny Temper performed. That was the first time I saw the difference in seeing music performed live. But at the same time, I went to see Migos perform at the O2 Academy in Brixton, and I didn't enjoy that. I really like Migos' music. I enjoy the fun they have with it, even though kind of it veers towards the future type stuff you were saying earlier. But I enjoy their music. I just remember sort of being shouted at for 3 hours by people on rotation. I thought, you know, maybe some of it doesn't translate that well live. But then you see other people, like when I went to the BBK takeover at the O2 Arena, which was, you know, where was everyone from Skepta to Giggs to Drake and just all of their friends. That was explosive and that was just wicked. Seeing Kendrick Lamar again, O2 Arena. On the fence with that one because I don't know, man. I still can't decide whether I like the sound of rap live, because ultimately the voice that you hear on a record when someone's rapping and not having to project is always going to be such a different voice to when they're having to project to an arena. Whereas singing, it's like a note's a note, you know?
It's a very interesting point. I hadn't thought about it like that, but like if you take somebody like, because I was at that the Kendrick gig at the O2, and I think what you said about the musicality of his voice, actually, you've got a situation where probably Kendrick is less well suited to live than other rap artists. Because, like, you sort of think there are some rappers that just belt out their lyrics. Do you know what I mean? They're not playing with the tone of their voice in that same way. So they can turn up and just spit loud, and it, and it's kind of similar to what you're hearing on the record. But like you said, Kendrick, somebody who plays with the intricacies of the vocals or whatever, you're never really... It's difficult, isn't it? You're not going to quite get that, I don't think. And it's...
And I think I got to say at this point as well, you know, I'm making these comments from the perspective of a fan, because now I've got a single out, people might say, look at this guy, he's talking about performing live stuff. I would crumble live. You know, I honestly, me trying to, I would sound like a sort of lockdown announcement from Boris, you know, trying to do my posh lyrics on stage loudly. So, you know, I'm talking from the perspective of a fan. And all of us, to be honest, probably couldn't do any, we probably couldn't get anywhere near the level of kind of difficulty it requires. But yeah,
speak
as a
yourself,
fan,
speak yourself.
Sorry, but, Bendrick Lamar over there.
Really, really slammy word.
Bendrick Lamar! Fucking hell.
That's going straight on the LinkedIn after this, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's no credit either. Don't think you're getting a credit for this. Yeah.
That is going to be on a Tinder profile somewhere soon.
Oh,
no, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. What are you listening to at the moment?
At the moment, I'm listening to a lot of Teyana Taylor, because she's a really interesting one as well. Now, I think she'd fall within hip-hop, but incredible voice. She can rap. The instrumentals are incredible. You know, in some ways, Kanye's protege. He worked with her on the very short form album she did. I think it was called Rose in Harlem, or at least that was one of the lead singles off it. She's just incredible. And her album, The Album, is just, again, there's just so much, there's so much gold in there, and there's so much variation.
Been through more than a little bit, been through more than a little bit, but I ain't calling no names out, no free promotion. Nah, I ain't late, I don't do due dates. No sneak diss, no sneak shit, that's just how I was raised. Had to get it out the soil, I've been down, I've been loyal. When you really hold it down, niggas ain't he really down for ya. Oh no, what a shame, 10 years in a game. Niggas like you ain't hot, you ain't pop, yes up with you and yay.
Also been listening to a lot of, for some reason, I got really into Fetty Wap again over lockdown.
Oh really?
Again, if you want to be talking purist hip hop, you may not fall into that, but I really enjoy what he does with his voice as well. And, you know, some of the instrumentals he uses. So, yeah, I think lockdown's brought a lot of the, kind of a mix for me. There's one artist I really love who, I wonder if either of you have heard of him. He's called Lancey Foe. Have you ever heard of him before?
No, I don't know.
It's very new school. But in terms of, like, we talk about people who you're drawn towards because of the way their voice sounds. So, you know, I might usually listen to, like, a DEE or a President T. Lancey Foe is like that. And I think when you think about the stigma attached to being unmanly in London, for instance, everyone wants to put on this deep voice. Da, da, da. I don't think he's too much bothered by that. Obviously, you know, the themes of his music are still very masculine. But in terms of experimenting, it's a very sort of rock style interpretation of hip hop, which I really enjoy.
Don't talk back, relax. We chop off your leg and we chop off your hand. We go get that piece of them. We try to talk, but you didn't understand. Militant soldier, man, anarchy man, came with a back to the band. You must forgot where the fuck I'm from. You must forgot what I'm on. You must forgot yourself on IG, tapping and scrolling alone. I was saying no to violence, I had my shankle alone. You got pagans and you're fighting, but you're doing it wrong. How could I beef my brother shit? How could I beef my blood? How could I beef my brother shit? How could I beef my blood?
I'm just trying to find new ways to kind of... I try to steer away from mainstream stuff as much as possible just to make sure I'm really kind of exploring music, the best that's out there, you know?
And then how does that relate in terms of... Because obviously with your videos, you're putting out stuff that's very of the moment, you know? And so I guess you have to be across all of that stuff. Do you have to do... Do you listen to stuff and immerse yourself in stuff for work reasons over and above enjoyment reasons, or does it tend to be that they coincide?
To be honest, I do. I really enjoy what British music has to offer, in the sense of there's always a debate of, oh, US or Britain. I think we're sick. Do you know what I mean? Like Heady One's album came out, I listened to that. Giggs's tape came out, I listened to that. You know, I always try and listen first, just so I have an opinion on it. But I do immerse myself in that world. But it doesn't feel like a laborious task, because I take a lot of enjoyment from UK music. I think, you know, we've just got a different caliber of producers and lyricism. And, you know, the way that Brits use words and structure sentences and semantics and all of these things. It's very unique to us. And so I enjoy kind of, I think, you know, Brits are intuitive poets, I'd say. And so sometimes there's something you get from listening to British, you know, to Britain's iteration of hip hop.
During lockdown or the last sort of 9 months, I've basically been obviously listening to yourself and then just like hours and hours of battle rap over the last like 10, 15 years. But what I'm become, Rom's so bored of me talking about it. I keep sending him stuff to listen to and he doesn't seem to like give a shit. But like, it's just interesting what you're saying about the UK. I think that like, it's really interesting comparing the styles, even with that, like the wordplay and everything from the British rappers are just so much better. And like, not always, there are some amazing American guys as well. But like, but yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I feel like there's just, maybe it's just because as being British, you suddenly relate to those punchlines and those kind of those sort of words more. But I think I agree.
Well, listen to this. So, did you know that Meek Mill actually tweeted some of my lyrics during summer?
What?
Really?
Yeah. So let me explain what happened. So last year, I did my Fire in the Booth with Charlie Sloth, right?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was going to be the epitome of the character, being able to do a real Fire in the Booth. And I was kind of really scared about how it would be received and stuff.
It was great.
People were really nice about it. And I thought, brilliant. Okay, cool. It's had its moment. Probably die down now. But it didn't. This year, for some reason, the Americans found it and they didn't understand that I was a parody artist. So they thought, oh my God, look, they're like, look, everyone, look at this British guy. Like they literally rap about crumpets and tea. And yeah, the first bars of the freestyle were, you know, riding round in a Rover. If I see ops, then it's over. I'll send man straight to Jehovah when I take shots like M. Sharapova. And yeah, Meek Mill tweeted that. And I just thought, what? My mind was blown. Bro, you have to read the comments under the Fire in the Booth now. It's all Americans. And it will be like, you know, Unknown P doesn't break and enter. He forcibly infiltrates with polite intentions and stuff. It's like just loads of memes in the comments. And that's so funny. Great. And that's why if lockdown wasn't happening, I would just say to a production company, let's go out there and let you do a hip hop tour of America as Unknown P. And just see how many of these people we can hoodwink.
That is crazy. Right?
That would be an amazing feature, Doc.
So Munya, we're almost out of time. What is next for you, mate?
So I think that next year, hopefully, will be the year that I can just take some of that 60-second comedy and take the kind of the rapid sort of gag rate and the really tight production, but maybe move it to something long form, like a TV show or a Netflix special, or do something a bit more long form to bring the characters to life a bit more. Being able to do that, you know, the Piers Morgan single, and just for people being able to see what would happen if we had money to make a music video and we recreated this. Well, we recreated basically like a sort of mafia-esque shootout where, you know, the guns were firing out pan au chocolats and stuff like that, and we were having a sword fight with Bentley keys. That just made me think, okay, cool. With a bit more money, these videos could actually be sick.
Yeah.
But seeing people fall in love with some of the characters that I've just made in my little living room, drawing on, you know, silly tattoos with marker pens and stuff, that like that low budget, the love they have for the low budget stuff I've done makes me think, okay, don't change the formula too much. So just finding a way to kind of, I don't know, a more glossy version of what I have been doing. And, you know, if people want more music, then there will be more music. I really enjoy making music. And I really have a newfound respect to musicians because of how difficult it is. But yeah, I have no intentions to let up, and I just want to keep pushing the bar and, you know, keep exploring satire, because I never thought I would ever kind of step foot within that arena. But it feels like I've got like a toe in at least, and I just want to really establish myself in that realm.
Well, I mean, mate, you're absolutely smashing it. And if you haven't checked out Munya's stuff, obviously not just Unknown P, all of the stuff he's doing, it's fucking brilliant. So make sure you do check it out.
JLS, all of that. You missed my self-deprecating JLS.
No,
joke.
I liked it.
You just didn't laugh. Okay, fine. I get it. Well, it's been great.
No, I think we actually thought it was JLS. Sorry, yeah, that's...
No, actually, yeah, part of me thought, fuck me, was this guy actually in JLS and I've like fucked this up? I can't believe I haven't acknowledged that. Ben, has it been? How's it been to be on with Munya? Have you enjoyed it? Did you? I think you handled yourself all right.
Yeah, I don't think I. Well, I don't know. Was I all right, Munya? Was it all right? Didn't...
Well, it wasn't. Put it this way, it wasn't a Ramesh DJ premiere moment.
Okay.
I left this compliment on this. Yeah, you did. You did manage to get it.
No, it's been good. You know, a lot of the time you don't get to. I actually love sitting down and talking about music. And a lot of the time, that's one of the things people don't really make time for. So it's been good to kind of just to reminisce about those car journeys, listening to A Tribe Called Quest. You know, those were the good old days, you know?
Yeah.
Well, look, Munya, you've been absolutely brilliant, man. Thank you so much for coming on Hip Hop Saved My Life. And I hope you enjoyed Ben.
Why do you have to end it like... What a weird...
Yeah, that's...
You started it weirdly.
That sounds like an OnlyFans review.
Awful. It is only, yeah.
That's what they say at the end of an OnlyFans subscription. Have you enjoyed this service?
Three stars. Yeah. Well, thank you, Munya. This is me, Ramesh, saying bye. And also goodbye from Bendrick Lamar. Thank you so much. Peace out.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.